But I'm so glad I read that story this morning. I
How about
mean,
you, Kay?
it's I think the foremost example of macaque journalism that we've had in years that I can recall.
Oh my goodness. Should we talk about the playoffs or should we spend 45 minutes talking about Yakay's riot? Yakay, I think is how you say the name of the female
That
monkey that
sounds
took
right.
over. I mean, that has to be the quickest rise to power we've ever seen in competitive sports.
Is, as rise to power goes, as rapid as Dominique's like plunge from power, because he is not even like technically able to join the show right now.
Is that okay? Yuck-ay. Well,
Yakay.
I don't even want to get into the monkeys until Dominique gets here because I don't want to deprive
I
him of
know,
animal
I
talk.
know. He is the foremost alpha male, undebatable. It does feel like he would be offended. But at the same time, he messed up his own computer hookup at home, Alabaster. Is that what's happening right now, or is Dominique protesting the show entirely?
We
What's happening?
had a bit of a software issue. He updated his iOS and it's no longer working with the show, or he just failed and didn't want to do the show today. TBD.
All right, so Pablo and I already did a show yesterday. We previewed the playoffs and ESPN Daily, and Pablo, it got me extremely pumped for this weekend.
Same.
I am excited about every single game. I alluded to this on the show, but you asked me if we would have a better slate of games than we did in the wild card round, and I said yes, and Vegas reflects that. And last I checked, the biggest point spread of the weekend was Green Bay at +6. Everything else was basically a pick'em or less, which is just wild and makes me extremely, extremely excited.
Yeah, so are you giving out gambling advice to your friends now, to the public now? Where are you on this? Are you an oracle
The
at this
only
point in that way too?
people who consistently ask me for gambling advice, and this is an appropriate place to reveal that, are Dan Le Batard and Mike Ryan every weekend.
I feel like they're not doing great right now, in terms of just, well, psychologically, obviously, but also it just seems like they're increasingly panicked about everything.
All right, Dominique's not here, but I think we should just get started anyways. What's the first game you want to talk about?
That's right. First topic. This is sort of a dream matchup of quarterbacks, and we have our question is, which QB would you rather have on Sunday, Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen?
Okay, so I'll just start by saying, would I rather have implies something more than just like trying to win the game. It's who do I have fun rooting for? And this version of Josh Allen, I mean, we just had last week the scene in the movie where the guy discovers that he has all of his superpowers and he can control all of them at the same time. I want more of that. I want more of that specific version of Josh Allen to actually make the hype that we're giving this game about is he better than Patrick Mahomes? I want that to be sustainable, Mina, because I feel like if this game decides anything, it is specifically that question, right? That is the framework that we've all
Wow.
settled on, is Mahomes versus Allen in
Wow.
particular.
I've built my entire identity
Hello.
around the notion that wins are not a quarterback stat. So I'm deeply offended by everything you just said. And it's especially offensive, I think, with this game, because part of the reason I settled on Buffalo, and boy, it was agonizing picking a winner. And part of the reason why, when asked on Around the Horn yesterday, I said I was taking Allen going into this game is not because I believe Josh Allen is a better quarterback than Mahomes. I think the version we saw last week was a better version. We have not seen that version of Josh Allen every week during the season. It's because I think the Bills defense is better than the Chiefs defense, especially given the way these guys play football, where you want to keep things in front of them, limit those explosive plays, and try to wait for one of them to make a mistake. Dominique, so good to see you. I simply believe that the Bills are better at doing that than the Chiefs defense. Do you disagree?
I'm so mad at Dominique right now. I'm so mad at him.
I'm sorry.
Has there been a more half-assed appearance on the show so far, on this fake television show where we debate about nothing?
The problem is it was an attempted whole-ass appearance, but I updated my computer, and so, like, all the settings that have, like, my fancy setup out there are no longer in there, so, like, I was, who cares?
Football. You tried to have a whole-ass appearance and wound up being just those two.
But, I mean, when you got ass like me, half of the ass is like more than enough ass to get the job done.
I know we're
like,
on the internet.
It's great. I mean, it's great. I know you don't look, but I'm sure you've heard that it's fantastic. Anyway.
I have looked, and he has a point, unfortunately. It's
just strong.
This is why Yuke took over her monkey society. I just want you to know. To not put up with stuff like this.
We already did the macaque talk. I'm so sad that I missed that.
No, we held off because you weren't here, which is part of why I'm mad.
All right.
Now we're in
Josh
a
Allen.
Conversation. Yes.
So I think that there's enough reasons to pick the Bills. There are probably more reasons to pick the Bills in this matchup than it is to pick the Kansas City Chiefs. But I also do think that the Bills defense has done a little bit of feasting on lower quality quarterbacks throughout the course of this season. So while their defense is as good as, or statistically the best in the league, this defense has not gone up against this offense in quite some time. And I think the offense that we have now, or gone up against this offense at all, because the offense we're seeing now from the Chiefs is nothing like the offense that we saw early in the season of the Chiefs. It's much closer to the efficiency and effectiveness of the old offense that they had. But I also think that one of the more important things, developments in the Chiefs offense, it kind of is more suited for this matchup. So their offense has had to become less explosive and a little bit more methodical and a little bit slower.
Yeah.
And normally you're like, no, you want as many possessions as possible if you're the Chiefs. But actually, you're going up against offense like the Bills. I think actually you're more prone to if you have fewer possessions, that means one mistake might be magnified and there are less chances to overcome a mistake. Yeah. I think you're in a better spot if you have Patrick Mahomes on fewer possessions than if you have Josh Allen on fewer possessions.
Yeah, the last time these teams met, the Chiefs just looked like a totally different football team. Defensively, I posted this and I felt a little bit mean, but Daniel Sorensen played 54 snaps in this game. Like, it just is what it is. Chris Jones played 0 snaps. 54 and 0 are really the numbers you need to know about the Chiefs' defense. They have evolved a lot since then. They have gotten better. Chris Jones has moved back inside. Frank Clark's been playing better. The linebackers they traded for Melvin Ingram has been good. But offensively, Dominique, you're 100% right. Like, this to me was the nadir of Patrick Mahomes trying to do too much this season in this game, forcing the ball down the field when it wasn't there. The run game was not what it is right now, which we'll get to in a second. And there was like a lack of patience. And since then, I think he has grown so much as a quarterback, which is incredible to say about a quarterback who was an MVP, who won the Super Bowl, who's several years into one of the greatest already early careers ever in the history of football. But he does look like significantly better than he did at this point in the season. He is patient. He waits for the explosive opportunities instead of forcing them. And I agree with you. I think for the Chiefs to win this game, they don't need those deep shots. They do need to do what he has shown a willingness to do in the playoffs, which is play patiently.
Zenith. I just have to say the word zenith whenever someone says nadir. It just feels like I'm obliged to do that. The zenith, though, of the Bills defense against the Chiefs, Alabaster just put on this card that I actually do want you guys' opinion on because it points out that in week five, they ran two high safeties 87% of the time. Dominique's already pooping his head sarcastically. So what is the state of the union on the two high safeties thing? Like, is that applicable to this week? Has that made as much sense as its sort of size in the word cloud of NFL discourse has suggested it would?
Dominique, you can talk. I saw a stat somewhere.
You put your hand up. I thought that meant you had something spicy to go with. So
no,
get your stat.
I
do think that the two high safety thing has been much overplayed. And the idea that they can't beat two high safety is kind of, to me, a bit farcical. But it has helped Patrick Mahomes evolve into this more patient quarterback that we're seeing right now. Did I filibuster enough for this killer stat?
I think this was from The Athletic. I hope I'm citing it correctly. I think it was Shiel Kapadia. But since week 12, Patrick Mahomes has averaged 0.27 EPA, expected points added per play against two high safeties, which is amongst the best, maybe the best in the NFL. That is a lot. He has been dominant. And what also just grabs me so much watching this Chiefs team last week, he was incredible throwing the ball down the field as well against the Steelers. But what really impressed me was how good the Chiefs run game looked. Like this is probably, I don't know if it's the best run blocking unit in the NFL, but they are up there. Jerick McKinnon looked incredible. They were running every kind of concept too against Pittsburgh, granted a terrible run defense. And I continue to believe we will see that in this game. Like what you're seeing right there, which is the Bills playing all that too high. If they do that against Kansas City, this version of the Chiefs will run happily. Patrick Mahomes will take what's available to them, to him underneath. I think he is a different quarterback from the guy we saw in week 5. And I know I just said at the beginning that I was leading Buffalo, but that's why I think this is going to be close.
Yeah, I think the red zone is going to be the answer to all the questions that we have. And unfortunately, red zone is sometimes more correlated with luck than anything else. And should the Chiefs lose in the red zone, and Andy Reid runs the cute plays, we're going to have to deal with people complaining about how cute Andy Reid got when it's not necessarily the problem, because so many like uncute red zone plays don't work. So why do we get mad when somebody tries something frisky? It confuses me.
Wait, so for people who aren't familiar with the cuteness scale that you're describing here, like give us some of the points along that spectrum, right?
I mean, it's shovel passes.
They did all of it last week.
Yeah, shovel passes, throws to offensive linemen, left-handed tosses, underhand tosses, old-fashioned wing tee style plays. You remember when they did the four tops? They did the four tops.
Oh, the dance.
They all spun. Like, I get it. Like, if it doesn't work, it's a problem. But then think of the alternative. Like, they are – I mean, most teams struggle in the red zone because it's much more difficult for offense down there because they don't have the threat of the deep ball, so they can sit on all your routes and there's not as much room. So, yeah, do something cute every now and then, because running up the middle is not going to work. Throwing a fade rarely works. Like, it just doesn't bother me nearly as much as it bothers everyone else.
Yelling at someone to be cute is also why that macaque revolted, by the way. Just like the hierarchy of heteronormativity.
What do you do to stop this version of Josh Allen, man? I've been calling him Josh Allen Super Soldier because he literally looks like he took Super Soldier serum. I think that's what happens in the movie. I've actually never seen that movie.
Oh, come on. It's just Captain America. Really? Can I pose it a different way? Because I'm listening to you guys talk about how excited you are about Josh Allen now. How he's even cuter than the cutest cutie pie that I had ever seen.
He's the opposite of cute.
But what you guys are describing here is something that is so starkly different from how you and smart NFL people felt in 2018. Can we just play the game of, like, if you guys could time travel, I'm all for the time travel game, and we can time travel back to the time travel game.
But I need you guys to refresh your VMix. Everyone but me, this is good. We're getting an echo when you guys are talking, and I'm not sure if it's coming out of Dominique's computer or Pablo's computer.
It's definitely my computer. It's definitely my computer.
We give the people, we are known to be a high-quality broadcast, and we need to give them that high-quality.
I feel terrible.
A bulletin board with post-its with a single headphone. I think it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, I'm the problem. I mean,
I'm gonna refresh now.
I'm gonna filibuster about Josh Allen and how devastating he's become. The problem, you know, he's incredible. Oh God, you give me the ISO cam. Okay, so he's not only a different quarterback from the guy he was in 2018. He's a different quarterback from the guy he was in 2019 when he plays like he did against the New England Patriots with a dubious performance in between those games. He is the best quarterback in the NFL. That is his. That is not his floor. The floor we've seen the floor in the playoffs. The floor is a guy who panics, turns the ball over. The variance is there. I would say that floor has risen a lot over the last 2 years to the point where we now count him amongst the NFL's elite. But it's slower than Mahomes. But the ceiling is a guy.
Are you allowed to make movie references to movies you haven't seen? That's the real question of the moment.
You know,
because like you're talking about super soldiers and you've never seen the movie. And like, I want to make so many references that you're not going to get, like talk about how the macaque is the what if version where Peggy Carter got the super serum. But you're not going to get it because you haven't watched the what if series.
The macaque multiverse.
You're not a true Marvel fan. And it's upsetting that you are allowed to cherry pick from our culture and use
your culture.
The Captain America. Yes, my
our culture
as a Marvel fan
is not our costume. Culture is not your costume.
I was in the Spider-Man commercial.
Oh,
so
come on. That's
even worse.
I just got
even
so
worse.
Mad all over again. Alabaster, how echoey.
That's what's commercial good? Gentrification.
It's not great. Dominique, we need to make sure that audio is just coming out into your earphones.
I'm just going to hang up. I'll be done.
No, stay. No, I'm going to talk about all these matchups. You can't leave me with Pablo.
Pablo.
I'm about to do a time travel thing.
All right. So I'm going to stick with the Josh Allen thing. So the problem, Pablo, is there's just no way to defend him at this point. You certainly can't blitz him, which is something that the Chiefs have done very unsuccessfully in the past. And if you sit back in zone, he has now shown not only a willingness to carve you up underneath, and the Chiefs have a great group of wide receivers that I think can create mismatches across the field, but suddenly Buffalo can run the damn ball.
I don't know what else I can do.
Josh Allen, who is an absolute nightmare on his feet, but Devin Singletary has been really, really good running over the last few weeks. They use Reggie Gilliam, the fullback. They put that tight end out there. It's part of the reason why Dawson Knox gets so many targets now. Has been so good. Brian Daboll has changed this offense so much from last year. They have evolved in response to how defenses are playing, and they have answers for every look they get, which is why they failed in the playoffs last year, because they didn't have those answers, and now they do. You can play man, you can play zone, you can do it with them light boxes, you can go heavy boxes. It doesn't matter. Buffalo has a changeup, and that's why this team is so scary.
Is what makes this team so special. It's like there's only one person that you need to keep healthy. There's only one person that you need. You don't have to bring in a new personnel grouping. You don't have to run some new fancy alignment. You don't need to make sure someone is extra taped. Josh Allen can do all the things that you need to do, and that's a really nice luxury to have, which is why I said last week the only chance that the Patriots had was to confuse him. Yep. Like, you have to confuse him, because if he knows and Brian Daboll knows how you're going to attack them, they have an answer to it, because Josh Allen is Hawkeye. He has all the arrows in his quiver.
Love that
every
show.
Arrow
Such
you
a good
need.
Show. I love every
Seinfeld,
episode.
You didn't watch
part
it.
Filipino. It does. I do like how your defensive strategy for how to stop Josh Allen is kind of like what you're supposed to do if there's a grizzly bear approaching you and you're about to die. And just like try to confuse him. I don't know. You have a jacket. Spin that jacket around. Like, just start yelling like a crazy person. Like, punch yourself. Can you start punching yourself to scare the bear? Like, is that a thing? How do you intimidate a grizzly?
Well, Ron McGill always said to just say, "Hey, bear."
Well, the thing is, there's the black bear, which you can supposedly, like, you know, ward off, and the grizzly bear, where the only advice is sort of like get down on the ground and get into the fetal position so that you can guard your organs, which is kind of what you're describing with Josh Allen. Like, just give up and roll around and hope that he's confused enough to go away.
Sharks are the ones who punch in the nose, right?
Yeah. What about macaques? How do you defend yourself against
it's Queensbury
Andrew.
Rules.
So
man.
Who's the
you
shark?
You gotta go old school boxing with them.
Who's the shark in this postseason? Which quarterback is the one you actually have to
punch
in
the
nose?
Nose?
Meaning like maybe you blitz. I don't know.
I think the answer to the question is always going to be Jimmy Garoppolo, because we're talking about this from a scenario where the quarterback can be flustered.
Yeah.
So yes, if there's a move, the answer is Jimmy G.
Can I do the very quick?
Those sharks have really tiny brains.
They do. They do have really tiny brains. Dolphins, though, have enormous brains.
Yeah, sea mammals.
They are very smart and a lot like us. Can I play the very quick version of the time travel game in which I hold you guys accountable for your Josh Allen takes? Because now you guys are raving.
Yeah,
I agree with you. We're celebrating. I just want to know if you were to show up in 2018. And you had the ability to whisper something into your younger self's ear. What would you tell them about Josh Allen?
Shh! Shut up! stop it now, is what I would tell my younger self.
I would say, don't, yeah, I mean, dial it down. At the time, I was just trying to entertain Dan Le Batard most of the time, so I was just got to be an extra. But I'd also say this, the King like, I want to live in a sports world where we can react and evolve and change our minds. And I think one of the coolest things about Josh Allen's story is that he developed so much, I think, as a from what I gather, as a product of his own effort and work ethic. And I think that's really cool. And I think it's also okay to acknowledge that you're changing your mind in response to an athlete doing that in any sport. But yeah, anyways.
I'd like, Dominique, that Mina's giving that, you know, Rocky speech. If I can change, you can change, we all can change. But I don't know if she would appreciate that reference or have the credibility to appreciate
it. Yeah. This is a different game, and I've definitely seen Rocky. I've seen all of them.
Yeah. Josh Allen made the most absurd leap in the history of professional sports.
Different game?
Like, no one has ever done that.
Did Alabaster fall asleep?
Dominique is on mute.
Dominique, we're going to need you to check your text
messages.
There he is.
Your headphones are muted there. Sorry to the audience. We'll move on to our next game. We're going to figure out Dominique's technical difficulties ASAP. Our next question. Do you think Kyle Shanahan can scheme up a way for the 49ers to beat the Packers?
Yes.
Mina has leaned into her microphone and is grinning at me. So, Mina, I'm guessing the answer.
Well, I want to start by saying I picked the Packers in this one. I tried to talk myself into the Niners. I think the Niners have a ton of matchup advantages, but then the part of my brain that remembers it's Jimmy Garoppolo versus Aaron Rodgers, pardon me. I realize I just didn't say, I said wins are not a quarterback stat, but I cannot pick that man over that man. It's just as simple as that. That all said, on offense, I absolutely think San Francisco can move the ball against this team. And I understand they're getting guys back. Barry Alexander did play in week 3 when these teams met, but they're getting Za'Darius Smith back, Whitney Merciless back. Russell Douglas has emerged as, you know, a great cornerback for them. Devontae Gamble is fantastic. But you know, this is not a great defense. It's been covered up a little bit because they were winning games down the stretch and they got the one seed, but they really collapsed in the back half of the season. They are terrible at defending the run. And I'll be curious to see if they make any adjustments to do so. They, Dominique, run a lot of those fronts with just one linebacker, the aforementioned Devondre Campbell. If they do that, Kyle Shanahan will murder them. You know, Debo Samuel, you can get into this, was not used as a running back the first time these teams played. No defense has figured out a way to stop that. I just don't have a lot of faith in this Packers defense. I'm picking the Packers because Aaron Rodgers, but I don't think the defense will be able to stop.
Yeah, aside from that, I think you're right about all of that stuff, but I also think that the short week matters, and the flight home matters, and the fact that last week's game wasn't a cupcake blowout. Like, it was a physical battle where they bludgeoned the Cowboys. And last week, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers were home, probably reading some very bad books.
Reading them and making us believe that he
pretending that
them.
They did. Just getting healthy and getting ready for this game, which I think is the advantage to me that matters most, because the way that the 49ers win this game is with a physical running attack, and they can't be nearly as physical as they want to be coming off of that game. So I'm still leaning towards the fact that they will not pull away from the Packers no matter what. And if they don't pull away from the Packers, then we're looking at fourth quarter drives. And then it comes down to Mina's very astute, although simple, analysis. I'm not picking that guy over that guy. Aaron Rodgers is the guy that I want in that situation, not Jimmy G, who tried to give the game away last week.
Well, can I ask you guys a wrinkle about this question, though? Because the scheming thing, and I am a Shanna Stan through osmosis by talking to you guys mostly, but let's say Aaron Rodgers does go up big, right? Let's say the Packers get a lead. How does that scheme and that strategy, how does that change if that's the case?
It doesn't. They keep trying to do the same thing, and they hope for mistakes on the Packers special teams or fumbles or turnovers. Like, I think Kyle Shanahan knows that there is no way to win if you have to spread it out and let Jimmy G cook. So we saw in that Rams game, he had some good passes, but when they came out of halftime and that big Rams comeback, they were doing a lot of the same stuff. They were running the ball. They were committed to it despite the fact that they needed to have a big comeback. So I don't think it changes until it absolutely has to change, because I believe Kyle Shanahan knows that is a recipe for an L.
You know, on the other side of the ball, I am curious to see if Rodgers struggles at all against this Niners four-man rush. So Nick Bosa is playing, and that to me has been the other massive development of the season. You know, I talked about the Niners offense and how they changed post Deebo Samuel becoming they call him a wide back. The Niners pass rush might be the best left in the playoffs.
Stop it.
And
Pablo, stop it.
Stop it. Stop it.
I'm just, and you know what? I'm sorry. I can't stop thinking about Dominique's butt now. You know, this is the way the show has got.
Right. It's not wide, it's thick.
Is there a thick back in the, I think the thick back is AJ Dillon in this one though. So you got a wide back check. And
I mean, like in the NBA it's Kyle Lowry, obviously. Like, you know, this.
Yeah.
We know that.
Mina was saying important things.
Yeah, well, Dominique, Rodgers, his production drops precipitously when he's under pressure. He is rarely under pressure, mostly because of his own abilities and the fact that he gets the ball out so quickly and he's so good at reading defenses, and this is a very good schemed up offense. But all of that said, if the Niners pass rush looks anything like they did against Dallas, this could be interesting.
That's true. And I think just to clarify the point, the stat that you were bringing up, it's not only that Aaron Rodgers is worse against pressure, because everyone's worse against pressure. Aaron Rodgers is worse relative to other quarterbacks against pressure. It's not the normal drop. So, like, he's the best quarterback in the league when not under pressure. And I think, Mina, you texted me that he's the 26th best quarterback
in QBR, 29th in completion percentage over expectation, which is an X-Gen stat that basically looks at how many passes should be completed and whether a quarterback exceeds that or falls below. 29th is really bad. Yeah, I was actually shocked when I saw that.
Yeah, I don't know who's on this list or where they place, but I'm just going to pick at random that Aaron Rodgers is worse than Jimmy Garoppolo, probably, based on the way that breaks out under pressure. Like, he becomes one of the worst quarterbacks in the league under pressure. So that's an important thing. He doesn't find himself in that situation often because their offensive line has been really good despite the lack of health of their left tackle, and because Aaron Rodgers is a hell of a quarterback who's seen it all and makes good decisions quickly. So if they're able to, there is no hot read for a four-man rush, which is kind of the recipe. If you have the blitz, Aaron Rodgers will be able to carve you up. If you don't have to blitz, then that's when it becomes trouble for any quarterback in the league except for Josh Allen.
That, by the way, go ahead.
I just want to ask the very basic question here just to clarify. Why is he so bad under pressure? Is that particular to this year's team and the help he has around him? Or is that just how he is playing? You know, as a psychological matter? Do you guys have theories as to that? Or is it just a very weird but true thing about this year?
I think there's a, first of all, I think it's a small sample size because I do think he's been under pressure so rarely relative to other quarterbacks. I think he's the fourth least pressured in the quarterback in the NFL. Tom Brady and him are probably up there. And again, that's not just about their offensive lines. Brady has a better offensive line than Rodgers did this year because of all the injuries. That's because they are so good at getting the ball out quickly, reading defenses, and attacking downfield, but with the ball coming out quickly relative to other quarterbacks a la Jimmy G. I also think, however, the Niners' offense is such that they want to win on early downs. They want to run the ball. They want to use play action. And they do not want to be in third and long. We know the offense wants to be in third and long, but these Shanahan offenses in particular do not want to be in third and long. And even though Aaron Rodgers himself is a far better dropback quarterback than the likes of Jimmy Garoppolo, the offense is such that those situations are disadvantageous for the whole group. Dominique?
Yeah, not only do they not want to be in third and long, they don't want to be in third down, it feels like. I tweeted out during the game last week that it feels like most coordinators, like, they think their money is made on third down, and they, like, scheme all week, and, like, can't wait to show this incredible scheme on third down. And it feels to me that Kyle Shanahan is in the lab looking at first and tens and second and eights. And he's just like, man, wait till I put it on him on second and six. I can't wait. He does not. He has no desire to ever see a three come up on the board. And it's impressive.
Yeah, I'm curious what the word would be. If we're calling Andy Reid cute, what adjective are we using for Kyle Shanahan, given that description?
Trent Williams.
The chain, by the way.
He's that always like that. That's the best thing about the playoffs is that, like, some people and things get attention that normally don't get that much attention. But Trent Williams, like, I feel like that's not the first time I've seen him in a bunch of chains looking huge and looking awesome. But it's getting a lot of attention right now.
All right, Alabaster, I want to do a quick check-in with you and ask you specifically, how's our technical setup going right now? Because I'm getting a lot of frantic texts from you, and let's just bring it out into the open here. Yeah,
not great, Bob. We're getting a huge echo when you and Mina talk.
All right. I told you I'll hang it up. I don't know what's wrong. I can't fix it. There's a bad update on my computer. I don't know. I'll fix it for next week. Like, I'm bringing great analysis. That's all I can do. That's
all I can do.
I love you and your butt.
I'm a very nervous bird.
No.
As Jim Harbaugh would say. And this is my anxiety's through the roof. But
you're about to hear a sentence coming out of my mouth that probably will never be said again. Dominique, can you leave so Pablo and I can talk football?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's the perfect face to lose him on. Yeah. Just sheepishly grinning at us. Alabaster, are you calmed down a little bit now?
Yeah, does it sound better?
Can we recenter? Are we doing okay?
I'm sad but relieved.
Okay, but the sound is fine. All right, let's move on.
Yeah, you guys sound great.
You know, let's get through some of these games.
All right, we'll knock it out. All right, next question.
I'll try not to talk about butts anymore.
Should we start taking the number one seed Titans seriously if they roll the Bengals this weekend?
So, Mina, there's a real part of me that feels like if the Titans are in the Super Bowl, the conversation before the Super Bowl would be, do you really believe in the Titans? Like, are they really that good? Because I still have that question, and I've had that question for literally the entirety of this season.
Yeah.
So I just want you to just explain for people, for me, for Alabaster.
Why does no one seem to believe in them?
Yes. Why? Despite proving it in all these different ways that they are worthy of respect, why we don't actually give them enough of it?
Well, Alabaster just put up the advanced metrics, and this goes beyond DVOA, which is Football Outsiders statistic. FPI also discredits them as an unseed, not as a playoff team, as a number one seed, which is an important distinction because I think most people think they're a good team. The question is, are they a great team? Are they actually better than the Bills and the Chiefs? Many people don't think that. I think a lot of the skepticism comes from the fact that because this team had so many injuries, not just Derek Brown, but losing Julio Jones at time during the regular season, it was often, and members of their secondary, it was kind of unclear who is on the team. What is the identity of them? What are they good at? But now everybody is back, and I can tell you with confidence what they are good at, which is this is an incredibly aggressive play-action passing team. They've also, by the way, been good at running the ball even without Derrick Henry. They have a very good four-man rush with Jeffrey Simmons, Bud Dupree, Denico Autry, and Harold Landry, which is massive in the postseason because I think something you'll hear as we talk about all these games is you can't blitz most of these quarterbacks. You can't blitz Joe Burrow. You will get punished. So I think there are stars on this Titans team.
I'm back.
How is that back?
Yes!
Did it work?
Did he fix it?
I'm back.
Act like Derrick Henry?
Is there an echo?
Act like Derrick Henry if Derrick Henry couldn't be heard when he talked. Dominique,
well,
just
much like
a lot of
Derrick
face
Henry,
right now.
You know, I question
I'm
whether
back.
He'd be using Dominique right now.
I'm
if
back.
He's not 100%. Okay, he claims he is.
I'm back.
Okay. Alabaster, how are you feeling about Dominique?
Final verdict, Alabaster.
Right now.
Not good. Now we have a huge echo again.
Dominique, all right. Go!
I'm gone!
Oh, man. All right. So, point is, the Titans do have an identity. You could say that, you know, they're the dogs of the playoffs. But to me, The question is, what do they look like now that all the pieces are back? We have no idea how good Derrick Henry will be running the ball. We have no idea if this secondary, which has gotten some players back, can stop the Bengals' passing attack. I frankly question it. My advice to the Titans, who I picked in this game, is this. Throw the damn ball. And that's not because I doubt Derrick Henry's ability to run, and I know, you know,
it's not because your giant other crusade besides wins are not a QB stat happens to be throw the damn ball.
No, it's because Cincinnati is not good at stopping the play-action pass. That is the Titans' strength. I think they want to attack downfield. I think Ryan Tannehill is a very underrated quarterback who's been very good at throwing under pressure and is very accurate taking those shots. And I think they're going to have to do it to keep up with the Bengals, who should, by the way, also throw the damn ball.
Right. I mean, so if you're watching this and you're thinking to yourself, I just watched Joe Burrow, like, reach the next level of his sort of ongoing transcendence as a quarterback. He is now in the conversation, and the conversation has a lot of guys in it. I mean, Ryan Tannehill isn't in that conversation, I think, but Joe Burrow is in terms of just that top tier level of quarterback. Is the Titans secondary really equipped, Mina, to stop Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and all of those wideouts that are very large and fast?
This is one of those matchups where you need the pass rush to get home. You need them to get home without blitzing so you can have more backs, more bodies in coverage. I don't think they're equipped. I think they're going to be very challenged at cornerback. They do have a very, very good safety duo, however, and I suspect they will use those safeties to help defend Ja'Marr Chase. So for the Bengals, to me, this becomes a question of, okay, if Ja'Marr Chase, they're going to bracket him a lot, he'll probably still eat. He has been eating even when he is bracketed. But if that happens, can T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd step up and be those secondary weapons? Because if that happens, I don't think Tennessee can stop them.
Okay, so big picture question here, because I just know Mike Vrabel, as I think he is meant to be known, which is the guy who volunteered to cut off his own penis to make a Super Bowl.
Was he asked that, or did he just say it unprompted?
That's a good question. Alabaster, do you remember how this came up? How Mike Vrabel offered to cut off himself in order to get the greatest professional success of his life?
Yeah, he was on a podcast with like Will Compton.
It was the Bussin' with the Boys podcast. Yeah. Yep. So
he was
presumably
asked about his experience winning Super Bowls as a Patriots player, and then what he would do to, you know, win as a coach.
Right. So I guess my question is, like, should we actually be thinking of him as not a joke and more like...
Yeah, he's a good coach.
The guy,
he is
how good is he? Because when this happens, right? When this happens, meaning chaos, major injury, like we don't know who to credit as the players are concerned. When that happens normally, we directly go to the coach. And I'm wondering if Mike Vrabel is maybe nationally overdue for that kind of lifting on our shoulders here.
I think he's good because, you know, I think it can be hard to gauge how important a coach is, especially when they're not like the offensive play caller, you know, or they're, we look at their decisions. I think he has been a good decision maker. He has been, well, wasn't aggressive enough in the postseason last year. They punted and it made me very angry. But for the most part, season, he has been good at making decisions. I think you look at game management, you know, and you can see the egregious errors of the likes of Mike McCarthy. He's been avoiding those. But I also think you can look at, have all the units on this team improved? Have they shown development? And to me, this goes just beyond Ryan Tannehill, obviously, taking this massive leap when he comes to Tennessee. But you look at the defense. You look at this pass rush. This pass rush sucked last year. They used to be terrible. And granted, they've added talent, both in the draft and free agency, but to see them take such a step forward in this defense, I think make the pass defense in particular, make that sort of improvement at some point has to be a testament to the head coach. And it's a big part of the reason why I think he is 100% a credible candidate for coach of the year.
So quick follow-up question, because we've now talked about like the too high safety trope. We're now back on the whole idea of can you get home with four trope, which you've been saying.
It's every year.
Clearly, so that's my question, right? Like, is that Is that just a truism about football? Is that a trend right now? Why am I hearing about this so much lately? And is it just because I've begun to talk to you guys? Well, just you, because Dominique's incompetent.
You hear year after year with Brady, because you know you can't blitz Brady. You know you can't sit back in soft zones like the Eagles did last week. He would carve you up. But the getting home with four, getting particularly interior pressure against Brady, it is a truism that comes up year after year because he is so good at playing the quarterback position. Now, you look at this group of teams in the divisional round, and there are so many good quarterbacks, Pablo. It's amazing, actually. Like, Jimmy G probably ranks at the bottom of the list, but, you know, even he is not that bad. And it really does feel like maybe outside of Justin Herbert, Wilson, Jackson, when he was healthy, we got the best quarterbacks in the playoffs. Yep. And they are so good against the blitz. I suspect if you actually ranked all of the quarterbacks against the blitz this season, most of them are still alive in the playoffs. Most of these offenses, you cannot blitz. And that makes up for some really, that makes for some really interesting coaching decisions, because you've got defenses in like Tampa, the blitzingest defense in the NFL, the Chiefs, who have been known to blitz aggressively. They tried that against Joe Burrow and were punished for it last time these teams played. And these coordinators have to make decisions about how to play these very good quarterbacks so that they don't punish them for their aggression.
Yeah, it does feel like we're now in the part of the playoffs that feels like one of those superhero movies that you have not seen, where all the famous rich actors are here to just dress in tights and spandex and be very famous and handsome and impressive, Alabaster.
I've seen all the superhero movies, so I
can't. That's right. All right, we got one more game to talk about, guys. And our question is, now that Matthew Stafford has his first playoff win, do you have any faith in the Rams to take down the Bucs?
Okay, Mina just went on a whole diatribe before about how wins are not a QB stat and we should not. But you have to admit, right, on some level, like, Matthew Stafford getting a win here, beyond the obvious, like, oh, he's still alive in the playoffs stuff. Yeah. Like, this matters to him in particular, right? Because I don't know how you disentangle the Lions stuff out of how you evaluate him. And clearly, this was an enormous thing, right?
I think it matters more to the Rams because they were so aggressively all in. And that goes beyond the Stafford trade. That, you know, what they traded for half a season of Von Miller, the fact that they basically aren't drafting until 2029 or whatever, you know, hopefully society's around then. Like, this is a team that wants to get to the Super Bowl, needs to get to the Super Bowl now.
Are they number one in terms of those desperation rankings, which I am now coming up with, in terms of just like teams that need this who are down bad? Like, the downest, baddest team in terms of that has to be the Rams, right?
I think so, even though most of this team will be in place next year. So it's probably a little bit overblown. You know, they're not going to have that sort of influx of young talent that you get through the early rounds of the draft. But outside of Von Miller, OBJ are both going to be free agents. Like, most of these, like Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, Matt Stafford, Cooper Kupp, they're going to be here. Robert Woods will be back. Like, Andrew Whitworth is, by the way, is questionable for this game, might retire, but the rest of the offensive line is relatively young. Like, this will still be the same team, but, you know, the trades, the drafts, they're so obvious, I suppose, about wanting to win now that it does feel like this onus is placed upon them. And it's amazing to say that given the fact that, you know, they're going against a quarterback who is going to be 45 next year. And yet we're saying that the Rams are under more pressure to win now. Like, that's kind of incredible to say out loud.
Yeah, I'm glad it's still jarring to hear 45 out loud, because I don't want to be numb to that yet. It is insane. The Stafford, and speaking of, by the way, like, mid-40s guys who this game hinges on, right? Like, you mentioned Andrew Whitworth. Like, Stafford against the blitz, Alabaster, you put a card down before that I want you to put back on screen, please, because what he does against the blitz, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers obviously blitz more than anybody by percentage in the NFL, Stafford happened to be the best by QBR against it. Whitworth being sort of in the balance as injury report goes, like, how big is that specifically for this game?
Well, they do have a very capable backup left tackle in Joe Noteboom, who did play a couple years ago. He started a lot of games when Andrew Whitworth was out. This is the deep Rams preseason knowledge I've been waiting to give all year.
This is Mina Kimes in a Radio Shack. Sorry, Best Buy Polo.
But
glad she's back.
But, you know, I still think Tampa needs to be really careful. In fact, I would say Whitworth being out means they should blitz less because they're more likely to get pressure without blitzing against Whitworth's backup. You know, JPP is back, Shaq Barrett is back, which is massive for them, and then Joe Tryon-Shink has been good too, their rookie edge rusher. But yeah, like, it's so fascinating because Todd Bowles loves to blitz. He adores it, and I think he is still going to dial up some pressures, and he does it in really interesting ways, and they're going to come. To me, it's all about, like, situational football, him choosing the right moments, but you have to be careful because it's not just about Matthew Stafford. It's also about Cooper Kupp, who tends to be his outlet versus the blitz and what he does after the catch.
So the wide receiver core for the Rams, I do want to do the national media thing where I ask you what the play of Odell Beckham Jr. says about our understanding of Odell Beckham Jr. Because I feel like the relitigation of his tenure in Cleveland is recurring here. It's resurfacing because he has been so effective for the Rams again in just 1 week of postseason play. Where are you on that? How should we think of Odell Beckham Jr. and what went wrong in Cleveland? What's going right here in LA now?
He's extremely talented. He's always been extremely talented. What is it? OBJ did nothing wrong. I mean, I've really enjoyed watching him. And of course, also, you know, because of the Rams scheme, because of the existence of Cooper Kupp, there's going to be more one-on-one opportunities. I think I mentioned that I suspect Carlton Davis might defend Odell, and they'll bracket Cooper Kupp. But, you know, he still has all of the qualities you saw as a rookie. The speed, the knowledge of leverage, his ability to get yards after the catch, to high point the football. You saw him in the end zone last week. Yep. He is incredible. And, yeah, he
threw
like
a 40-yard pass.
Kind of, it's funny. Like Matthew Stafford got his first playoff win, and that's great. But it kind of feels like Odell was the winner of the playoffs in a lot of ways, the first round, because of everything that he went through in Cleveland. And it's a big part of the reason, by the way, Pablo, why I picked the Rams. I don't feel great about it. I picked them. I just think the Bucs defense is going to have trouble stopping all these weapons. And on the other side of the ball, Tom Brady being down his starting right tackle, Tristan Wirfs, who did practice today, but suffered a very serious injury, is massive. Like, that might be the most massive injury of all involving any team this weekend.
Right. We saw what happened when Tristan Wirfs tried to play while hobbled last week, and it was scary, I mean, for him and for his team. And yes, Alabaster points out that he is a long shot right now to even play in this game, according to the NFL Network. Yeah, Tom Brady took 3 sacks last week after Wirfs left the game
because
that ankle injury.
Tom Brady threw the ball in 2.17 seconds last week, which is bonk. I think that's the fastest in a playoff win ever.
Yeah, you guys saw that. Right.
That's like Ben Roethlisberger time to throw. It's crazy. And they were going tempo. They were using play action. They were doing everything possible to try to adjust for the fact that they lost Tristan Wirfs. And now they have to do it against the Rams defensive line. And if there's one quarterback I can trust to handle a deficient offensive line and get the ball out quickly and make right decisions, it is Tom Brady. But boy, this is not an injury they want. I mean, this is already an embattled Bucs team, and this is probably the worst possible scenario for them.
I want to ask you about the Brady thing. On the broadcast last week, I was watching the game, and they pointed out that Tom Brady, and maybe this is just a fact that all football people know, but I was very caught by it. Tom Brady knows what he's going to do. He's read the defense before the snap. Like, his pre-snap understanding of everything is that special, which is different from the guys who read and react. Is that overblown in terms of how special Brady's mind is pre-snap, or is that underappreciated even?
No! We're talking about the dude being 44. He has seen everything! This is why, like, the LeBron comparisons are so apt. Like, his mind, it's such a cliche, but his mind really is his greatest tool at this point. I mean, you cannot fool Tom Brady. You cannot show him any defensive look he has not seen before. To me, it really just comes down to a question of talent and whether he's protected, because his mind, his gigantic brain, cannot play right tackle. Although that would be a funny image, brain playing right tackle, but it cannot. So man, I don't know. I hate picking against Tom Brady, and I think...
I know. I'm leading you down a road in which I want you to re-examine what you've done here, Mina.
What we just saw happen to Kyler Murray is not going to happen to Tom Brady. There are weaknesses on this Rams defense that can be exploited. Linebackers in coverage, still down a starting safety in Jordan Fuller. We'll see if Taylor Rapp plays. Tom Brady can take advantage of those matchups. However, the fact that he's lost Chris Godwin and potentially Tristan Wirfs and Antonio Brown, it's like we are really pinning his arms behind his back in a way that, you know, like Patrick Mahomes was in the Super Bowl.
And a way that we are without Dominique Foxworth, who I've texted, by the way, quote, text me takes to read. And he responded, quote, no. So Alabaster, what's up next?
Well, I think we're just going to go to a bonus topic here and get you guys out of here. Okay. But the bonus topic is from Javi on Twitter, who said, and this is very apt given the last quote, hashtag Pablo's jeans are happy to see Foxworth 24 get kicked off the show today.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. My jeans are not eager to be replaced. You will not replace them, is what they like to say. But replacing Dominique specifically, totally cool with.
Oh, the jeans, yeah. Is that your only pair of jeans?
No, I mean, it's apparently the only one that matters, because I have lots of other ones.
I would
and
venture,
that's, by the way, totally normal pair of jeans. Find a new slant.
I would venture that the problem with this photo is not the jeans, but the pose.
you mean this is not how a person who always hangs out with pickup trucks holding a football wearing sunglasses would pose?
You look like
that's
you've
not how that looks?
Never done any of the three things you mentioned in your life. You also kind of look like you're like posing for a Tinder photo and misrepresenting your identity.
Well, I definitely am roughly 6 feet tall and very athletic if I were to describe my own build as per the photographic evidence provided to you. And it's also probably the last time I will do any of that, because I, as I've said before now, pretty sure Nissan wasn't hoping for this kind of promotion when they paid me to wear clothes and stand in front of their pickup truck.
I know.
So there is that.
Shout out Nissan. Shout out Dominique Foxworth's internet. Or
yeah, can we get him sponsored? Can we get?
Can
like Optimum, Time Warner, right there? Oh man, that face, that smile. Can we compare contrast Lenny's face and Dominique's face at the end here? Just smiling dumbly into the camera. Has a
Wait,
certain yep.
We got dumb. I don't call my dog dumb.
Did I say dumb? I meant neutrally. Definitely neutrally. Neutrally posed face.